welcome to the big thing on Total Soccer Show, the show where we go deep on a big trending topic in the beautiful game. Today, we're turning our attention to the return of NWSL, which kicks off again this Saturday, March 16th. The league's in its 12th season, and we're going to talk about the runners and riders, the new expansion teams, the players to watch, the broadcast deal, and much, much, much more. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me to go through all this and much more, Taylor Rockwell, hello.
Hello.
Joe Lowry, hi.
Hi.
And Graham Ruthven, howdy.
Howdy. Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks. You all got a different greeting there. Wasn't that good of me?
I did three.
So proud of you, Graham. Well done.
Very good. On that note, should we roll straight into the action, guys? What's the... Joe, if you had to sell me the league in a quick elevator pitch sentence for this season, bigger and better than ever before, what are we leading with here?
Yeah, you did a good job of it there. Bigger and better, and also more money, which we know leads to, generally, better product on the field. The NWSL has now, I believe, the top two transfers in women's soccer history. Rachel Kunandanji coming to Bay FC from Spain, Zambian International, and then Barbara Banda coming from China to the Orlando Pride set. You know, those two players are now, I believe, the most expensive players ever in the women's game. The salary cap increased even as allocation money gets phased out. There's a new TV deal that is 40 times richer than the previous one with CBS was. There is more money in this league than there has ever been. It feels more stable than it has ever been. And I think the product on the field is getting better and better year over year. And I expect this year to be sharper and more entertaining than last year.
Very exciting stuff indeed. And Joe, two new teams, right?
Yeah, Bay FC coming into the league and Utah Royals are back. But they are an expansion team for all intents and purposes. They are an expansion team. So we're back to 14 teams. We're at 14 teams in the NWSL. And there's more supposed to be coming. Boston is coming. There will be another market as well as we march towards 2026. The NWSL is intent on continuing to grow the footprint of their league, both domestically via expansion and then also internationally as they become a bigger player on the transfer market. And we've seen evidence of that over this winter period. Yeah, more teams and some, especially Bay, I think everybody are more excited about than Utah. Sorry, Utah fans. But I think we're going to see some really fun stuff, especially up in Northern California.
Anti-royalist, are we, Joe? Is that
they
what
you're
saying?
They sent you a shirt, Joe.
I will not be bought with shirts. I will accept shirts. I will absolutely
clearly
not be bought with them.
He's anti-royalist and he's America first. Joe, a question for you. We talk a lot about when it comes to the U.S. women's national team, how like some of the issues that we've seen in the past, I have at least argued that other leagues are catching up around the world.
Sure.
And are like helping generate more talent that is creating better national teams.
Yeah.
That could soon pose a problem. Do you feel like with some of these announcements, with the expansion, with more money, are you feeling better about the state of women's soccer in the United States and about the future of the national team?
Yeah. I don't know that the transfer spending necessarily factors in like immediately on the top line to the U.S. women's national team improving. But everything you said there, Taylor, I agree with. I think we are seeing the European giants actually start to wake up and treat women's soccer like it should be treated and actually invest in the game, and emphasis on start. But we are seeing these European leagues, some of the big clubs in those leagues, take things seriously and put together really, really good products. Barcelona, we'll talk about them later as it relates to the Spirit, have developed into a dynasty in Spain. And it's cool to watch. What I think, though, Taylor, probably plays a bigger role for national team development is the youth movement that we're seeing in the NWSL right now. It seems like there is a real drive for younger players to turn pro because there are more stable professional environments where parents and kids can feel okay now, at least in a lot of ways, about sending their daughter to go and play professional soccer at a young age. Jaden Shaw, Olivia Moultrie, there's young players popping up left and right, but those are legitimate national team players now. And Jaden Shaw has been mentioned in at least one article I read as an MVP candidate, and I don't think that's out of line. So for me, it is the fact that the NWSL is willing to go a little bit younger and is adding elements into the league that allow the teams to actually go out and sign those players. And that, I think, will have a real direct impact on the quality of the USWNT.
And Joe, maybe it's not fair to compare different leagues and different nations, but where do we feel NWSL sits in terms of quality, in terms of stature with the likes of the Women's Super League in England, with the Spanish League and so on?
I think it is on quality across the board. In terms of consistency, it is the best league in the world. I think the top teams, I think about Barcelona, I think about Wolfsburg, I think, you know, maybe Bayern's sort of in this conversation. I think about Lyon and PSG and some of the top teams over in England. Those teams would be very, very, very good in the NWSL. Maybe not all of them every single season, but I think those teams are very strong, and I'd be curious to see an expanded format where we get the we go get Gotham, or we go get Portland or San Diego going and taking on some of those teams. But I think across the board, the quality of the NWSL is high. Not all these teams are going to be good, just to make sure we squash that right now. There's going to be some rough teams in the league this year. But generally, if you're talking about top-to-bottom quality across the board, I don't think there's a league that matches the NWSL right now.
All right, good stuff. Taylor, why don't we kick off by talking about one of the new guys, Bay FC. That's B-A-Y, not B-A-Y.
Salt Bay FC.
Salt Bay FC, correct. They're an Arsenal affiliate, this team. No, they're in San Jose, of course, at PayPal Park, the Earthquake Stadium. Ali Wagner, co-chair of the team. What else do we know, Tay-Tay?
I mean, they have aspirations to be good immediately, yeah. Certainly in comparison to their fellow expansion teams. The addition of Aziza Doshuala from Barcelona is one that makes me very excited. She's been like in and out of that team. She's not always their like out-and-out starter, their guaranteed starter, but I think she is a very good difference maker who can put the ball in the back of the net, and you definitely need sort of reliable veterans, even if they're not league veterans, when it comes to competing off the jump. But it feels like they have aspirations to be a competitive team. From what I've read, their build in the front office has been rooted around data and analytics. They have a whole department headed by Ariel Dror, who I believe, Joe, is that an alum of websites you enjoy?
No, that's Ariana Cascone, who does fantastic okay. work. But Ariel had done work for American Soccer Analysis and is sort of in that analytics space, and they have, Taylor, to your point, built a lot around analytics, and I think you can probably see that in some of the signings they've made.
Yeah. So I think it's a smart approach. It's an interesting approach for an expansion team, and it also simultaneously, Joe, you're better positioned than I am to confirm this, but it feels like one that isn't built around like we're going to get star after star after star in to make that impact. It feels like they're building towards a logical approach that will make them a good team that will keep the ball and play attractive soccer. So yeah. I think they are a team that I'm enthusiastic about. I wouldn't put them in like the contenders category necessarily, but I feel like they have reasons for their fan base to be excited and for neutrals to want to see what they're doing.
Yeah, they've hired Lucy Rushton as their general manager. I spoke to Lucy for an interview when she was at Atlanta United a few years ago. She has also been at DC United and just found her very impressive. She's from a data and analytical background, so that leans into what you were saying, Taylor, about their general approach. There's ambition all the way through this franchise, isn't there? And even extended to the way that they want to play, because it would be easier for them in an expansion season, and look, they haven't played a game yet, so the proof is in the pudding, but it'd be easier for them to be a little bit more conservative, and but it seems like they want to be possession based and control matches. One signing that I am interested in, for obvious reasons, is Jen Beattie. She has been one of the most prominent Scottish players down in England for a number of years at Arsenal. She's an Arsenal legend, so very notable that she's made the switch to BFC. She's 32, so they'll be hoping to get a good few years out of her. In terms of how she plays, she's very physical, she's strong in the air, both in a defensive and attacking sense. She likes to come forward for corners, she's a very good leader. I do kind of wonder how she'll handle the transition style of the NWSL, because she doesn't have a great deal of pace, and I do fear that she could be exposed. But that's where the style of play, the approach, the identity that BFC are going to adopt could help her out a little bit.
I understand why you went with that name. That was not the name I thought you were going to go with, Graham. So I would just add the big name would be Rachel Kundanangi, who is now the world record.
No, the Scotland
transfer.
International is more notable than the world record transfer.
Brought over from Madrid CFF. And Joe, like we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, or I was asking you, that like it feels like NWSL has made a shift, or some teams in NWSL have made a shift towards signing players. It's not Amandine Henri. That didn't go so well for the team that pursued her. It's not like the names. It is players who are going to have an impact, who are maybe less heralded to a sort of average casual soccer fan, but I feel like could make a huge difference. So I should stress that they are spending money, obviously, yeah. Bay FC, but it's to me in an unconventional way.
Yeah, I think there is absolutely some of that. You combine the ambition, the fact that they've clearly been willing to spend on transfer fees. The salary cap in the NWSL was doubled over the offseason, and the expansion teams have a few extra assets to work with to try to help them get up to speed. So you add in all of those things, and there are some other roster rules that do make some other things a little bit more complicated. But in general, there's more money flowing around the league, and as an expansion team, you are uniquely positioned to take advantage of that increase because you get more to work with, and Bay have totally done that. I mean, Kundanangi is 23 years old. She was fantastic for Madrid CCF last year over in the Spanish top flight. CFF, that's my bad.
Fake Madrid, I think.
Fake Madrid, what would that
non-real.
Be? Like, yeah, yeah, non-Real Madrid. She was so, so good and has so much of her career ahead of her. Now, the one asterisk on this whole thing is that she went down with a knee injury on international duty with Zambia recently, and I haven't been able to see what the extent of that injury is, but Bay FC fans and NWSL fans in general have every reason to expect this team to be competitive and maybe even to be very good coming into 2024.
And talking of Real, how about the Utah Royals, Joe? Are you feeling similarly bullish about the prospects of our Utah friends?
No, I'm not, and I don't think anybody probably is out there right now. This Utah team, managed by Amy Rodriguez, former U.S. Women's National Team player, they've done some things trying to bring in players that will give them a strong defensive spine. Every time A-Rod talks, it seems like she talks about a lot of the like proper football man kind of stuff, right? Maybe she's a secret proper football woman. And it's a lot of, we want to be aggressive, and we want to go find winners, and we want to, you know, be hard to play against and hard to break down.
Pints of wine.
And, yeah, all that stuff, whatever you need. Like, I just don't see it. Probably not. I just don't see it with the talent in this team. Like, I think that's a fine tactical blueprint. Easy for me to say blueprint. But I just don't see the quality in this team. They picked Allie Centner out of UNC, U.S. Youth International as well. Number one overall in the draft, and we'll be relying on her in the attack quite a bit this year. There are some solid pieces in Utah, but I think they're in a completely different conversation from where Bay are as an expansion team.
I enjoyed the American Soccer Analysis previews the previews they've done. And for Utah, like when they got to the goalkeeper category, that felt like a good sign of where things are, which is basically they've got Mandy Hout, they've got Carly Nelson. Neither have been a full-time starter in NWSL. Hout played a few games for Gotham. Like, we'll see what happens there. It's a lot of like, we'll see what happens. That might work. We don't know much about this player. They could end up doing this. It definitely just feels like a team that is about... Like, I don't mean this to sound dismissive. It's just like, I feel like they're trying to exist the first season. Get their footing, get things figured out, see how Amy Rodriguez does as that kind of like first year manager, and then kind of build from there. It feels like they are a definitive expansion franchise, not trying to compete right away necessarily, but trying to like find their footing, get stability, and then build from there.
Yeah, I totally agree with that with what I've seen in my research. And one name that Joe did mention, but just a quick beat on her, Allie Centner. That's quite an exciting addition. The number one draft pick, the 2023 ACC Midfielder of the Year in college, signed to be a core part of this team. She's 20 years old, good attacking versatility, can play as a nine. I think most people expect her to play at the top of the midfield unit. And her attacking numbers are really impressive. She gets on the ball a lot in the box, registers a lot of shots. So I guess Utah's season in an attacking sense could sort of depend on how quickly she beds in, but she's certainly got a good level of talent.
Good stuff. And as we noted, or as we inferred earlier in the episode, they're playing at America First Stadium, as it's been known now. America First is a credit union, of course. It's not at all politically charged, that name, which is wonderful. Cool. Joe, anything else about the Utah Royals we should know?
Nope, that's good.
Cool, great. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the broadcast deal. We're going to talk a bit more about the roster rules, and we're going to get into previews of all the NWSL teams. Back shortly.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to the big thing. Joe, in the A block of the show, you mentioned the broadcast deal and it eclipsing the previous deal that that the league had with CBS Paramount. What's the deal there?
Oh, I like what you did there, Ryan. So the previous broadcast deal for the NWSL, which ran over the last three seasons, was worth $4.5 million, so $1.5 million a year from CBS. This year's broadcast deal, which extends for the next four seasons total, is with ESPN, CBS, Prime, and Scripps, and it is worth a total of $240 million.
That's definitely more.
I know I'm a math guy. Yeah, Graham got to the crossword there.
Wait.
Feels
yeah,
bigger?
That's more.
Feels bigger,
yeah.
Right? Okay, yeah. This is huge. Like, this is a massive increase. You cannot say no to that money. Now, one thing, there has been some backlash from fans, and I understand bits and pieces of this. Where to watch games now gets more complicated. They're not all in one place. You know, having to go out there and get a bunch of different streaming services is not super convenient either. So I'm sympathetic to all those things, but I don't think even the most passionate fan who doesn't want to or can't justify getting all these services, I don't think they can begrudge the NWSL for this financial increase.
Joe, very quickly, what are the broadcasters, the list of broadcasters?
ESPN, CBS, Prime, and Scripps.
What is that? That's the Scripps one that I need more information on. Yeah,
I don't watch TV other than like soccer and other shows that are on TV. I know they've got the spelling bee. I think it is an over-the-air channel. Is that right?
Hold on. There's a network which has the spelling bee as its marquee.
It's like the Scripps spelling bee. It's called the Scripps spelling bee. It's like the national spelling bee. I think that's the only way I know it.
But is it like a streaming service or a linear TV channel?
I am not a good person to answer this question whatsoever. I'm sure fans and listeners are screaming right now. I believe it's an over-the-air like antenna streaming network. I've never watched anything on Scripps in my life, Graham. I don't really know.
Okay, right. That was the one that stood out. I'm not entirely sure what that is. But of course, the money and ESPN, CBS, Prime Sports, who knows, Scripps might be a great partner. I just don't know a huge amount about them. That is certainly notable.
Yeah, but of course, as Joe inferred, Graham, it means that a number of streaming services or broadcast services involved here, so going to have to be looking at the schedule to find out where to watch your next game.
Yeah, that's not ideal. Obviously, the big headline is the money sort of offsets that. But my biggest hope in the immediate term, talking about things that might offset that inconvenience, is that the product is better. That was one of the biggest things from the MLS Apple deal. I know people still have issues with that deal, and it was risky for MLS going fully onto streaming, but I don't think anyone can argue that MLS as a product has never looked better as it does now. So there are things like there are going to be double the number of cameras at NWSL matches from now on. So that's a huge positive. More resources for pre and post game shows, better streaming quality. So I think sometimes in the past, the NWSL has been a little bit small time in its packaging by networks. And that is one of the things I want to see from this new deal is better packaging, see this as a better product. Just one final point as well. Another positive is, I also think the timing of this deal is smart because it's for 4 years, and that four-year period takes the NWSL right up until the end of 2027, immediately after a Women's World Cup that could be on home soil that year. So unlike MLS, which has obviously tied itself into a 10-year deal, the NWSL is making a bet on itself that growth over the next 4 years will be real, that interest in women's football will be even greater at the end of 2027, and they have then timed this deal accordingly to set them up for the next one, which obviously they would hope will be even bigger.
Mm. Joe, are you familiar with, I promise this will make sense, are you familiar with Channel 15 in Phoenix, Arizona, KNXV-TV?
I know that's where the ABC broadcasts are locally. Yeah.
All right. And then Channel 61 is the independent station. Both of those are operated by Scripps, affiliated with whatever broadcaster they are. So they're affiliated with ABC, but they're operated by Scripps. So it seems like they do indeed own a huge number of local broadcasters. So it starts to make a bit more sense. You are correct. It is over the air. But then they have also acquired things like Cracked. And I believe also Stitcher. So they have hands in a lot of pies, including local media.
So when can I get my Scripps Prime half and half and half and half scarf to celebrate the deals?
Ryan, if you knit it, I think you can make it for yourself anytime. I think that's all fine. The one thing on the broadcast side that I do want to make sure I mention is, yes, it'll be a little more difficult for fans to find games. Like, they're not just all going to be on Paramount Plus anymore. But I think the NWSL has done a good job of trying to stratify whose games are when. Like, one example, all of the Amazon games, I believe all the Amazon games in the regular season, Friday nights. I love that idea. Like, carve out a pattern that viewers know when and where to watch games. It seems like MLS is still, they've kind of pushed towards that way, but they haven't branched out a lot of the traditional, outside of a lot of the traditional windows yet. And so, just on the whole, this broadcast deal to me seems like a massive win. There's more money in the salary cap now. I don't think those things are related. Like, there's an obvious connection there. To have twice as much money in the salary cap, maybe not quite as much if you factor in allocation money starting to go bye-bye. But, like, teams are spending. Teams are spending legit money to build legit rosters, and that is a very exciting thing.
Yeah, the one thing with the Prime Video slot, Joe, so I broadly agree with that. I have been on the show before saying, mostly with regards to MLS, that having a consistent slot is key. So that is a good thing. My experience with Prime Video is they're not great at putting sports front and centre, so I hope they don't bury it in the UI and they promote it.
That's a real risk, right? You think about going across four different partners, the idea of not being the priority on any of them, and which is the reality, is the reality for soccer in the United States in so many different ways, not just the NWSL. There are real challenges there, so it's not like an automatic grant. Oh, no, it still is an automatic grant sign because you're getting $240 million. Never mind.
Yeah, and as you say, Joe, some of the rules changing. We're seeing some of the transfer spending going up. What specifically can we say about roster rule changes and caps and such for this season?
So the big bullet points here are, in the offseason, the NWSL doubled the salary cap from $1.375 million to $2.7 million. And along the way, they're phasing out allocation money, which works in a similar way to how it works in Major League Soccer. That will be gone by the end of 2026. So that's a big increase and a notable change. And on top of those changes, the league is adding one thing that I'm fascinated with is the luxury tax. They're sort of adding in a luxury tax-esque rule. So the NWSL now has a soft cap on transfer spending of $500,000. For every dollar spent over $500,000 on transfer fees in a given year, you lose a quarter, like literally 25 cents. So 25 cents on the dollar of your salary cap. So here's an example to make the math make sense. If you drop $1 million on a transfer fee, let's say Utah Royals hear us, they're like, no, we want to be ambitious. Let's go out and get Puteas. Let's go out and get Bonmati, whoever it is, right? Doesn't matter. We're going to go out and drop $1 million on a transfer fee. Your salary cap drops by a quarter of that amount, so $250,000. So your cap that was $2.7 million is now restricted to $2.45 million. As a roster sports nerd who's been conditioned by MLS, I think this is fascinating. I'm very curious to see what this looks like and how it impacts spending. But for now, with that huge bump in salary cap, we've seen two record-breaking contracts in the offseason. First, it was Maria Sanchez with the Houston Dash, and then that she had it for a breath, and then it was Mallory Swanson with the Red Stars. We're seeing big money contracts, and I think that is probably going to continue for a while.
That's great, Joe. And with the cash flow increasing in the league, you say we're seeing a bit more investment in youth as well.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. And Angel City are a really good example of this. They have Alyssa Thompson, U.S. Women's National Team player, a player that a lot of folks know. They signed over the offseason Giselle Thompson, which is like not necessarily a signing that says, oh, we've discovered this unheralded prospect who we really, it's Alyssa Thompson's sister. But she's a very good fullback prospect. And they've also signed Casey Fair, 16-year-old international for South Korea, was at the World Cup, the youngest player to ever participate and play at a Women's World Cup. Like, teams are looking younger. We're seeing this in Kansas City. We're seeing this in, like, we're seeing this all over the league. Teams are going younger, and Jaden Shaw and Moultrie are still the two best examples. Shaw, Moultrie, and Thompson's sort of in that category as well, even though I'm not quite as high on her as I am those other two. But, like, there are real legitimate young talents in this league, and Angel City are a team that I'm specifically watching to see how those young talents actually perform in 2024.
Well, speak of the devil, or the angel rather, Joe. We're going to start going round the league to look at each individual team. We'll start alphabetically with Angel City. Graham, would you like to start off by telling us a bit about our friends in California?
Yeah, so I think the main storyline with them heading into this season is, up until now, they kind of proved just how difficult it can be to achieve immediate success as an expansion team. We've obviously talked about BFC and their ambition. And Angel City, they entered the league a couple of years ago with a lot of ambition. And they have made a splash. I don't want to diminish that. It's not like they've been an outright failure by any stretch. They get the second biggest crowds in the leagues. In the league, they made the playoffs last year, finished fifth in the regular season, which was an improvement on the season before. But in football terms, they aren't yet a Tier 1 team, and so I think this season the ambition is to be to make a step towards that. As I say, they made the playoffs last year, but they were beaten by the rain in that first game, so I think progression for them this year would be a postseason run. And for that to happen, on the back of Joe's point about Angel City and their youth, they need some of their young stars to fulfill their potential quickly, right? Alyssa Thompson is well on her way to doing that. Although no Angel City player scored more than four regular season goals last year, so Thompson getting close to double figures would certainly be helpful and then pushing them forward this season. Giselle Thompson, as Joe mentioned, Casey Fair, young talent. So nobody doubts the talent that Angel City have. It's just if it comes to fruition this year. A concern would be their defence, given how leaky it was last season, and also a Junendo-less midfield as well. She's out injured at the moment. So it might be solely on Thompson to make things happen, because that midfield doesn't exactly say to me that they're going to produce a lot for the attack in a consistent way.
All right. Taylor, does that sound about right?
Yeah. It sounds like, from what I read, there will be an emphasis on younger players, largely because a lot of the bigger name players that they have pursued over the years, giving up draft picks to get them, no longer with the team, no longer likely to play very much for the team. So it does seem like they're in a little bit of a transition period, while at the same time, I think, to Graham's point, trying to make that jump. So I think that is what has me interested in watching them this season, is to see how much they're able to kind of find solutions to areas of need and then sort of bet in and become a consistent performer in the season, or if they end up inconsistent because of some of those deficiencies in their roster build, or perceived deficiencies, I should say.
Marvelous stuff. We've covered Bay City, Joe. Should we jump to Chicago Red Stars?
Yeah, let's do it. Bay FC done, Angel City done, Utah done. Let's do Chicago. They were dreadful last year, like absolutely dreadful. You lose Mallory Swanson with an injury with the U.S. Women's National Team in April, and everything crumbles. And it's sort of understandable, because Mallory Swanson is an MVP candidate whenever she's healthy on the field. She is so good. And I think there are probably some folks out there that have forgotten how good she really is. And I am stoked that we're going to see her in Chicago. The big picture storyline for this Red Stars team is a lot of stuff is new. And a lot of stuff is needed to be new, because the organization was an absolute dumpster fire like 2 years ago, and even trending into last year. And there's still a lot of problems with this organization. But they have a new general manager, relatively new ownership, and they have a new coach in Lauren Donaldson, who we talked about leading up to the World Cup with Jamaica. Does good things with Jamaica. I don't think anybody's under the impression that he's going to try to play this super expansive style. I would imagine it's going to be a lot of mid-block defending and hitting on the break. And hey, when you've got Mallory Swanson, who can score, who could have double-digit goals and assists this year, like that, maybe not assists because I'm not sure she has the right players to pass to, but she is that kind of player. When you have her up top running the channels, doing sort of a different but similar in role Bunny Shaw impression, like she's a very different soccer player than Bunny Shaw, but will fulfill a similar defense terrorizing position in that front line, that's all mostly fine. In terms of other big moves, you have Sam Staub in, which I think is massive. Tierna Davidson over with Gotham, we'll talk about them later on. Sam Staub is one of the best center backs in the league, coming over from the Washington Spirit. And the hope is that she will help add quality to this backline. Casey Kruger's gone as well. So there are concerns. I don't think this team's going to be very good, but I know Mallory Swanson is great, and that will make them fun to watch.
Fantastic stuff. Taylor, unless anything to add on Chicago, would you like to take us to Houston for the Dash?
I would, because Joe pretty much covered every single note I had on Chicago. I am apprehensive. Let's talk Houston, where I am also apprehensive. Signed new manager Fran Alonso from Celtic, likely to play a 3-4-3 with pressing and possession. They traded for CC Kaiser, who will, I think, is expected to fit this approach from everything I read. And a player from the most recent World Cup that I very much enjoyed is Michelle Alozier. She's still there. Right wing back. Could potentially be very key for them this season because she can do the things defensively, obviously, but also can contribute to the attack. Can score some goals, can create some goals, but can also just be a very lethal threat on the wing, pinging in crosses. So she is a player that I am excited to watch play for Houston.
Amazing stuff. Joe, anything to add on Houston?
Sorry. Taylor, I was just taking a drink of water and got really distracted, which is shameful behavior. Did you mention Maria Sanchez there? Is that where you left off?
No, I was talking about Alozier.
Okay, perfect. So I'll do a beat on Sanchez. She signed in the offseason the sort of first big contract in around this big salary cap increase. So it makes sense. You double the salary cap, you're going to get some inflated deals. And Sanchez, while being very talented, Mexican international, I do not think there is a reality in which she should be now the second, having the second biggest contract in the NWSL after Mallory Swanson, who broke that record. She has 6 goals combined in her last 2 seasons in Houston. Good progressor, good 1v1 dribbler, just the end product in the final third hasn't been there. So that is, for me, the biggest thing that Fran Alonso needs to figure out coming into his first season in the NWSL is how do we try to make Maria Sanchez into a player that is worth being the second richest player in the NWSL? Because she just has never been that player. I don't understand the decision from Houston. I sort of feel like that money would have been better spent elsewhere, but she is talented and has very clear skills on the field. The Dash scored fewer goals than anybody in the league last year. Their games generally had the fewest goals in the league. They were dire to watch, and Alonso is here to change that, and a big part of that will be getting Maria Sanchez on the ball in the final third and figuring out how to best utilize her to create chances for others and for herself.
They do still have the vibe, though, of a dysfunctional organization. And I should add here that I am not certainly not an expert on Houston Dash. I would even say I'm an expert on NWSL. But if you look at the managerial history, even the ownership history, even the front office history, it is just a lot of upheaval. It is a lot of tumult. It is a lot of players being traded there who don't seem to want to go to Houston. Not that CeCe Kiser was not excited about this move, but I think it was a surprise to her that she was being traded.
And that's on Kansas City, frankly, by the way. Kansas City have done a really poor job of like being a professional sports organization and communicating with their players about stuff like that. So I put that one less on Houston, but more on KC.
I'm excited for Joe to talk about the Kansas City Current. But so Houston, it's just one that like that is, if I'm looking at what I want to pay attention to this season or what will make them a compelling team to watch, it is the expectation that with a new manager, with a sort of like renewed energy and trying to make something happen and be exciting and be possession oriented and high pressing, like is it a fresh start, or is this a similar conversation to the one we had last season where it was new manager, exciting proactive soccer, they're going to be good, and then the same old things, kind of wheels falling off? I am more optimistic than I was last season for Houston, but I'm not going to say massively more optimistic.
All right. Well, Joe, why don't we talk about the Kansas City Current? Not so hot last season.
Joe loves their coach.
Yeah. What do we think, Joe? Any of that Mahomes winningness going to rub off this season?
Hopefully for Kansas City fans. It is Vlatko, as Taylor referenced very subtly, who is back in the NWSL, Kansas City guy, back in the league with the Kansas City Current. I'm intrigued to see how this goes. Like, I don't have... The timing of me coming into this job did not really align with watching Vlatko's teams in the NWSL. He was successful in this league and was dire with the US Women's National Team. So I would assume we're going to see more of the first version of Vlatko and less of the second. Who knows, though? For me, though, the biggest part of Kansas City Current right now, and the thing I'm most interested in watching about them, is less to do with the on-field stuff, though I'll talk about that in a second, and much more to do with the fact that they have become the owners of the very first women's soccer stadium in the United States, the very first professional sports stadium built for a women's soccer team in the world, purpose-built for a women's soccer team. It's incredible. 11,500 seats, CPKC Stadium, easy to say.
Catchy.
Not really, doesn't quite roll off the tongue, but this thing looks incredible. This is now a must-visit soccer experience, a must-have soccer experience in the United States. They're opening up the season. They've got an early game on Saturday. That thing's going to be packed. They have sold out their season tickets. Like, this is so unbelievably cool, to the point where we had the listener questions episode earlier this week, and there was a question about what soccer moment, you know, has changed people's lives for the better or something along those lines. And I honestly thought this was in my notes. I didn't end up saying it because I was saving it for today. But, like, how cool is that? I just cannot get over this is the coolest thing that is happening in the NWSL right now. The fact that there is a stadium purpose built for the Current, it is awesome, and I hope that the on-field product matches it, because last season the Current were billed as preseason favorites. I bought into the hype. They had added Dabinia. There were lots of pieces to like, and then everybody got hurt. Like half or two-thirds of their roster over the course of the year was on the availability report. Read, they were not available. That's what that report is. So I'm hoping that this team stays healthy. I'm hoping that Bia, who's coming in from Brazil, there are quite a few Brazilians in Kansas City these days with the Current. I'm hoping that she can be an asset that Dabinia can use. I'm hoping that Michelle Prince will be something, even though I don't understand the point of that trade that Taylor just kind of walked through with Kiser and Prince. They need more production in the attack, but mostly they need to stay healthy, because if they do... And that home environment, that atmosphere, and with the quality that they have on the field, they will be a playoff team.
The confusing thing with Kansas City Current, Joe, to like your point about the stadium and how exciting that is, I would echo all of that. I would add, they've added little, like very, like nice little things, like naming the press box after Grant Wall, who's a Kansas City native, the late Grant Wall. Like that is a very nice, touching thing to do. And yet the news about the stadium that was like dominant was the fact that they're charging $800 for parking, which is what, $50 a game or something like that. Maybe that more was
some
made of that
LAFC stuff right there.
Be.
Yeah. You like that?
That's comfortable.
Right? But it's like more than match day tickets. And so it does feel like at a time when this should be the biggest talking point, an amazing talking point, a thing that kind of puts them on the map and has everybody kind of like neutrals pulling for them for that reason, it also gets kind of soured by some of that news. So I think... That is kind of an interesting point for me, just that they continue to be a team that is functional and dysfunctional simultaneously.
Hang on, let's stop the clocks. An American sporting body charging far too much for fans to attend. Are you saying this is unprecedented?
It's never happened before. It's never happened before.
Outrageous.
I just like, Joe, were they Were they supremely unlucky last year, to your understanding, or was it also just like roster mismanagement?
The injury crisis that they had is something that I've never seen before. Like it was absolutely unbelievable. They are a much better team, I think, than they showed through stretches of last season. They did play some good soccer. They need better goalkeeping. Eddie French was really, really poor last year. And
did she have the yips? Is that what I read?
It sort of seemed that way. It was bizarre. And so that was a real issue as well. We saw Cassie Miller in goal for this team at times. I'm not wowed by this team's roster at this point compared to some of the moves that we've been seeing made around the league. But, man, to go back to the stadium one more time, I just still think this is so cool. And this is easy to say as someone who doesn't live in Kansas City and is not trying to go to every home game and is definitely not paying $800 for parking. I just don't care about that. Like, I understand that's not ideal until your point is completely valid. The Courage, we still don't know why they fired Matt Potter. It doesn't sound like it was for any of the reasons that we've seen pop up in the NWSL before, in terms of personal conduct, but they've just done a poor job of communicating all sorts of things to their fans, and they don't seem to always treat their fans the best. But this experience will be incredible and is so cool, and I love it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Joe. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go through the rest of the teams, including the reigning champs, Gotham FC, coming up next. Back shortly.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to the big thing. Gotham FC, Graham, the coolest name, arguably, in all of soccer.
It is a cool name.
Yeah, yeah.
It has also a cool badge as well.
Yep, yeah, cool badge, cool, cool trophy they've got right now. How are you feeling about this season?
They look pretty strong. They've got a stacked roster, so they've got returning stars like Lynn Williams, Midge Purse, Esther Gonzalez, Jenna Nyswonger, who's just coming off the back of a good Gold Cup. But then they've also added Crystal Dunn, Tierna Davidson, Rose Lavelle, and Emily Sonnet. So at this point, they have a good portion of the national team in that roster. And in terms of big picture, the storyline for them is pretty straightforward. Can they repeat? Their story last season was an incredible one. The turnover in fortunes at that club from 2022 to 23 was incredible. They got their flowers, but now you need to keep it going. You need to keep watering the flowers. So the moves that they've made in the offseason, that's the expectation that they have placed on themselves. If I'm looking at kind of non-footballing factors, obviously last season they had the, you know, the Ali Krieger swan song season, farewell season. They also had that motivation behind them to prove that, you know, they didn't deserve to be there, or they were better than the Wooden Spoon winners. That has changed now. And so I do think that is a question, is in terms of the identity of that team and the personality of that team, how do they react to that? But some of the players that they brought in, obviously Crystal Dunn being one of the most notable one, going from Gotham to Portland. She grew up just outside New York, so this is a move home for her. And she said in interviews that having family around her was a factor in making this transfer. Obviously Dunn is known for her versatility, played in pretty much every position on the pitch, so it's possible that she will play a number of different roles for this team. But primarily it seems like she's been signed to play in an attacking midfield role. So that is exciting that we'll see her in a really have a big influence over games this season. The one I'm most excited about, though, is Rose Lavelle, who is just, she's one of my favourite players. I think it's a really interesting signing because the way that Gotham set up to allow players like Lavelle to be a little bit more creative, so that should merge well with our natural game. I also just love that attacking unit of Esther Gonzalez, who I've always been a fan of, and then with Lynn Williams, and then you add in Lavelle making runs beyond and being the supply line and providing goal threat of her own, and we see Esther Gonzalez dropping deep, and that might work well with Lavelle. So that is a pretty formidable unit, and then you've got Emily Sonnet to play as the six. So yeah, some real national team vibes that Gotham have going on right now, and they will take some toppling.
Yes, sounds like the team to beat, Graham. Thank you very much indeed. Joe, let's go to the greatest state in the union, North Carolina. Tell us about the Courage, please.
Oh, I'll do the second thing, but I will not agree with you on the first. They finished third in the NWSL last year. The big top line story for this team is, can they create chances? Or the question maybe is, can they create chances without Caroline? They didn't really create chances with Caroline last year, NWSL MVP. They had so much of the ball, and they are fun to watch in the middle third and in their own defensive third. Sean Nahas has this team dominating possession. They had almost 60% possession last year. They had tons of 10-plus passing sequences, as Opta defines them. Nahas wants his team to control games with the ball. That control has to turn into chances. The Courage were 10th in expected goals last season. They need more, and they've tried to go out there and do things that will give them more. They traded for Ashley Sanchez on draft day. They've gone out, and Emily Fox is now playing for Arsenal in the WSL, but they've added Feely Rauch as a left back coming in from Wolfsburg. They've made some moves, and the Sanchez one in particular is just such an obvious, we know we need chances, and we hope we get 2022 or 2021 Ashley Sanchez and not maybe 2023 Ashley Sanchez to go in and create those things for us. There's a lot of talent in this team. I love that they have a way of playing. Everything comes down to the final third this year, and I do mean everything.
Fantastic stuff. Graham, anything more in North Carolina, or would you like to take us down to Florida for Orlando, please?
Yes, let's go to my favourite city in Central Florida, where I'll be next month, Orlando. I was going to say Kissimmee or somewhere different, but no, why would I even kid anyone else?
Shout out to your Florida knowledge, Graham. I'm so impressed.
Is that how you pronounce it, Kissimmee?
It's how I pronounce it. I'm sure it's not how you pronounce it.
I think it's more like Kissimmee.
No, it's not that.
Yours is better.
It's not that.
Editing, if we could just chop that right out, that would be great.
Shall I talk about the soccer?
Yeah, do that.
To end this whole thing.
Yeah,
Orlando Pride, I think the big storyline with them is as an individual storyline. Can Barbara Banda succeed Marta as the star of this team? Marta's obviously a legend, but she's at the point of her career where she's being phased out, and her role is primarily a leadership one, although she can certainly still contribute. But in terms of a superstar attacking player, Orlando needed a succession plan. And Barbara Banda seems like a pretty good one. She could change the landscape for Orlando this season. Their attacking numbers last season ranked them pretty much mid-table last year. Barbara Banda could change that. We spoke about Barbara Banda for Zambia at the World Cup. An explosive player, just an exceptionally dangerous attacker. And so I'm really looking forward to see how she does in the NWSL, obviously moving to Pride. Is that the second? That's the now second in the world transfer
list? Yeah, Kunal Nanji would be the biggest. Yep.
Exactly. So that kind of says a lot about the stock that Orlando are putting in her this season.
Joe, how are you feeling about their attack? Because as Graham said, you have Marta. She's going to be, what, 37 or is 37. Adriana is a proven chance creator and goal scorer. Barbara Banda coming in. It feels like it could be very exciting. It also feels like an injury here, an injury there. If Marta isn't still at her peak, then it could be the opposite of a good season.
Yeah, the depth really isn't quite there. But man, I still don't think we have grasped how filthy good this Banda signing is. She is transformational in the way that some of the other top players in this league are, and she puts the pride into conversations that they just weren't in last year. They trade Messiah Bright, who was in the Rookie of the Year conversation, I believe had 6 goals last year for Orlando, first season in the NWSL. She goes to Angel City, and everybody's sort of wondering who's going to replace her, and Banda is a phenomenal replacement. So in terms of the starting 11, I do love this attack, and I think it is one of the better ones in the league. The depth is a question mark, and I do have some questions deeper downfield. But man, the Pride put themselves into different conversations this offseason than they were in last year.
All right, Joe. Tell us about the Portland Thorns, obviously a challenger for the title here.
Yeah, the question for them is, can they keep up with Gotham? Like, Gotham are the reigning champions. We've already talked about it. They are the title favorites, according to every bookmaker, and that's probably fair. Can the Thorns keep up? Because they were, if we think Gotham are going to be this team playing the fun, exciting soccer, that have the good on-field product, that are going out and scoring a bunch of goals, like, that was the Thorns last year. They lit the NWSL on fire. Sophia Smith is a game changer in this league, and she probably should have won the MVP award last year, but did not, didn't go back-to-back. The Thorns, in general, had 11 more goals than any other team in the league. Like, they were the dominant attacking force. Now with Crystal Dunn gone, can Jesse Fleming, who arrived over from Europe, can Olivia Moultrie, you know, take another step forward in her young career, and I would expect her to do that. Can Sophia Smith continue to improve as someone who is still a young player? Those things, I think, will define the ceiling of this team. There's also some questions about their defense and their goalkeeping, which was not great last year. But the firepower is there. Whether or not they are good enough as a collective to go out there and challenge Gotham, and we'll talk about San Diego shortly. I think those three teams are in that top tier right now in the NWSL. But like, where those players are and how they take this team one step forward or don't, like, that is the question, because this team has enough talent to go out and win trophies. The execution is a different story.
Joe, do you feel like this is a team that is built for now, for the future, or for like 2 seasons ago? I get confused by their roster because they have like young, promising talent. Sophia Smith, obviously, you mentioned. But then there's still the wily veterans, the crafty veterans, Becky Sauerbrunn, Christine Sinclair. So it feels like a team that could be very good, but also could like have the years catch up with them. But that is me talking about them as a person who certainly has not watched them nearly as much as you have.
No, I think, Taylor, the point that it seems like you're making there is totally spot on.
That's always
like,
good.
Like, they're in between eras a little bit, in that Sinclair is a super big veteran and Sauerbrunn is in that same category. But anytime you have Sophia Smith in your team, you are built to win now. And there is enough talent around her for this team to win now.
How many of that type of player do you think exist in the league? I know that's like a big question, but it does feel like in a lot of the previews I read, maybe. there was a couple different players who were consistently like, oh, but they have her, so that makes up the difference. They have her playing here, and that can make like a season unto itself. You'd say 5?
I think there's probably 4 or 5. Maybe it's a few more than that, but Smith is 1 or 2 in that list, and Swanson's probably the other one.
Wonderful stuff. Thank you very much. Joe, would you take us to Racing Louisville, please?
Racing Club. Let's do it.
Racing Club Louisville.
The thing I'm most excited about for this Racing team this year is the midfield. They have Savannah DeMello, who was at the World Cup, is a phenomenal player, well-rounded, creative, set-piece threat, all that stuff. They have Jalen Howell, who is the best destroyer in the world, maybe second after Lena Oberdorf. And then they added Taylor Flint, who was Taylor Korniak, then she got married. Taylor Flint coming in a trade with the San Diego Wave. That midfield is filthy. It's physical. It's creative. It's different than you'll see in any midfield in the league. Beviana's new head coach was an assistant for them last year. Like, she has a chance to do some really fun stuff with this team. The attack is the question. Like, they have Ari Borges. They have some good players. They went in and added some fringe, you know, talent this offseason. I don't love the attacking line, but the midfield is so much fun. And the hope, if you're a Louisville fan, is that it's so good through the center that you don't need elite production across the forward line.
Good stuff. Graham.
Joe, sorry. I have a question for you. So in reading about Racing Louisville, the American Soccer Analysis preview, there's a lot of data in there that maybe my dumb brain that only remembers song lyrics can't get its head around. Howell contributed just 0.01 interrupting goals added above average per 96 in 2023.
Okay.
What?
So my understanding, and I'd have to go out and read the rest of the piece, goals added a stat from American Soccer Analysis is divided into a lot of different categories. The goal is to look at how your on-ball actions impact your team's probability of scoring or conceding goals. That's what goals added does as a whole. Then you look at specifically interrupting, which is a lot of the defensive stuff, and I'm not really sure exactly how valuable that stuff always is. But if it's just that much above average, which I think is what you said, that was a lot of info coming all at once.
0.01 I would imagine that, interrupting goals added above average per 96.
So it seems like from that the data says she isn't adding a ton of value with her defensive contributions. I would imagine there's some stuff that the data doesn't see there because teams are afraid of Jalen Howell, so they don't even bother. But that is an interesting stat nonetheless. I haven't gotten through all the ASA previews, but folks, they are always excellent across MLS, so go check those out.
Graham, will you take us to San Diego, please? Hopefully the Snapdragon Stadium swimming pool has dried out in time for the season now from the W Gold Cup.
Yeah, that would be good for the start of the season. So for the Wave, I think the ambition this season is pretty clear. Go one step further. They finished top of the regular season standings last year, faltered in the playoffs, though, so the aim is to reach the championship game and win the championship game, I think. Joe's already mentioned Jaden Shaw. I think she is one of the biggest individual storylines in the whole league. She is getting better and better all the time. She was one of the players of the tournament for the US at the W Gold Cup that's just finished. She might be the face of the future for the national team's attack. So the question is this the year that she propels herself into the MVP discussion? Obviously, the Wave have that sort of generation-spanning attack of Alex Morgan and then Jaden Shaw. There's a few teams that have that sort of thing because, of course, Jesse Fleming joining the Thorns to play with Christine Sinclair. There's some similarities there. But yeah, Jaden Shaw could really light up the league this year.
I also really like the introduction or the addition of Hanna Lundqvist, a 21-year-old Swedish defender. She's played a couple years, 3 years, I believe, for Atletico Madrid, who are obviously a very successful team over in Spain on the women's side and on the men's side. But she just seems like the type of smart signing that we've seen San Diego make, where she is not maybe the splashiest headline grabber, but I think will become a very important part of this team as the season progresses. And I should note, though I do love the hiring the U.S. Women's National Team make, Casey Stoney was the one that I advocated for pretty aggressively when we talked about that coaching vacancy. I still think Casey Stoney is just an incredible coach to the level of being a difference maker, similar to some of the players that we've talked about being difference makers on an individual level. I feel like Casey Stoney is a good enough coach to elevate players and really get a team to come together quickly and be very solid. I think I am probably most hyped about San Diego, even with the additions that Gotham have made.
Taylor, I'm willing to forget your Casey Stoney shout if you're willing to forget my Laura Harvey shout. I was convinced that was going to happen.
I think you guys are Emma Hayes for the win. That's all I've got to say to that.
Two more teams to preview, guys. The Seattle Reign, Graham. Tell us a bit about what's going up on Lumen Field.
Yeah, talking about Laura Harvey. So this season looks like being one of the biggest tests of her managerial ability. Obviously, she's a stalwart of the NWSL. And I guess the good news is for the Reign that she is back at the Reign. You know, she wasn't hired by the national team, which was a thing that looked a possibility after the World Cup last year. That would have made this season almost impossibly challenging for Seattle, because Harvey is one of the few threads of continuity left at that club from last year. Rose Lavelle is gone, Emily Sonnet is gone, Megan Rapinoe has retired. So that is one attacking difference maker, one locker room leader, and a key structural piece in the midfield all gone in one off season. So that is definitely a challenge. This is still a roster with talent. So the back line of Lauren Barnes, Alana Cook, Sofia Huerta, that's going to be key. They still have Bethany Balser and Jordan Huitema in attack. So certainly talent within this squad. But it doesn't really feel like Seattle have made the statement signings that other clubs have over the off season, and that places a lot of pressure on Harvey to find something that works.
Yeah, one of my NWSL hot takes coming into this year is that it wouldn't surprise me if the Reign missed the playoffs. I know they were good last year, they're in the final. They lost a ton of talent. Grammy did a good job of diving into that. And some of the reasons why we've seen a slower transition for this club than fans certainly would have hoped from one era to the next, and make no mistake, that's really what has happened, even with some continuity still in Seattle, is an ownership change. They are going from the OL group, so the Olympique Lyon group that I'll talk about in a second when we get to Washington in more detail, because there is a connection there. And it seems like they're going to be bought by the Seattle Sounders, or at least in part by the Seattle Sounders. But they're in that weird in-between stage where it's not super clear exactly who's all pulling the strings and all that stuff. So the offseason's been a weird one. You got Jiso Young in midfield, 33 years old, former Chelsea player. She will help fill the void. Sam Meza as well as a player that I like in midfield. But I'm not super high on the Seattle squad right now.
Joe, last but not least, let's go to the Washington Spirit, shall we? Do we expect them to be a team sort of teetering on the edge of the playoffs this year?
It kind of seems that way, right? So there's eight playoff teams. Taylor's shaking his head no, so I'll let him talk in a second. There's eight teams in the playoffs, so 57% of the league making the postseason this year, up from 50 last year. Two more playoff spots. Whenever you've got Trinity Rodman and Ashley Hatch and Andy Sullivan in your team, you're going to do a lot of good stuff, Casey Kruger as well. Like, there is legitimate top-end trophy-winning talent in this squad. The big shift is they aren't getting their permanent manager, Jonathan Gonzalez, or Heraldes, excuse me, until the summer. That's Barcelona's manager, Barcelona Femenil's manager. 32-year-old Spanish coach has won everything with Barcelona, won the Champions League. He's not coming till the summer. So it is a splash that the Spirit felt was worth making, even though they have to sacrifice half of the season in order to actually make it happen. That puts them in this weird tactical limbo, going from Mark Parsons and his 4-4-2 diamond against the ball last year, which was weird, and I don't think that's really what the Spirit as an organization wanted to be doing. They wanted to become more of a possession-heavy team. So that was sort of a wasted year. Now Sanchez and Staub are gone. Have they been adequately replaced? I'm not so sure. But man, the talent in this squad is really good, and if you can get yourself into the summer, then I think this team has a shot to finish anywhere between like 7th and 10th in the league.
Yeah, I think Joe is optimistic, and I think maybe more accurate, because I think Trinity Rodman can also be one of those difference makers. Maybe I am overestimating the importance of having a manager, which feels like an odd thing to say. I just can't shake waiting until July. I understand why they've done it. I think it is a long-term view, and I think it's a very smart hiring because of all of the silverware that Joe just listed that Heraldes has accumulated and the work he has done in helping form that Barcelona team that are so dominant, that have been so critical to Spain's success at the international level. So I think the signing makes sense. I don't even really have an issue with it. It's just that when you want to change the style, like Joe was talking about, and be a more expansive, possession-oriented team, even if you have an interim manager who's going to try to start instilling that, which they do, it still feels like you're going to have some time with a new manager to figure things out, to get the vibes totally right, to figure out who fits where. And so even if he's arriving in July, it might take a little bit of time for that to fully hit the ground, not even hit the ground running, but fully get it up and running. And so it does feel to me a little bit like this season is a, hey, if we make the playoffs, that's great, but we're all about building towards next season. And some of those departures also feel like we're accumulating pieces, we're accumulating picks, we're getting ourselves in a position where we have flexibility if we want to spend, if we're looking okay, but if not, we can use all of that in the offseason and really be good in 2025. So it's an odd situation in my mind that it's a team that I think are very exciting, that have made really interesting moves, but could also miss the playoffs and still in some ways be successful overall on the season.
Yeah, Taylor, point taken on all that stuff. I think it is a big question mark, and it's a difficult one that Washington have put themselves in a position to have to answer. There's just no world, at least in my world, where they're a worse team, even with chaos on the managerial side, than Utah or Chicago, probably not worse than all of Houston or Louisville or maybe even Kansas City. Like, they're not a bad team. They were not good last year, but I think there's a lot to like. The other thing here, and while still largely agreeing with you, the question is just how much all that matters, and we'll find that out later this year. The other thing that I think is worth pointing out about this group is the ownership. Michelle Kang is becoming the leader of a women's football group. We talk about City Football Group with all the Man City clubs around the world. We talk about the Red Bulls, and there's other ones that have popped up over the years in Europe as well. Last May, it was announced that Kang is the CEO and majority owner of a new football group, and that involves the Washington Spirit, that involves Lyon in France, and they just went and bought the London City Lionesses in the English second tier. This is super cool. I'm very intrigued to see what this looks like. This directly ties to OL Reign no longer being OL Reign, and them now being the Seattle Reign, and them now trying to move out from underneath that football group, because you can't have two of them in the same league. You can't have both OL Reign, now Seattle, and Washington Spirit underneath that same umbrella. So just something cool, something I'm watching for, and something that I think will continue to grow over time and probably will aid the Spirit in one way or another.
True story, Joe. I was talking to my mum the other day, who lives next door to a soccer stadium in South London. She was very excited because she told me the Lionesses were coming for a game and was getting ready for all the fanfare. It was the London City Lionesses.
There it is.
It wasn't quite the ones she was expecting.
Well, I'm sure she's excited about Michelle Kang, though, and her fits. And
100%. Yellow.
Yeah, okay, cool.
She's having her for tea. Yeah, definitely.
Great.
Cool.
A closing question for everyone. What's everyone's favorite team name? I'm going to assume it's Gotham because that is a cool one. But like, I ask largely because, and I'm just going to feel very foolish here, but own it entirely. It took until this episode for me to get Racing Louisville, that like obviously Kentucky Derby racing.
Derby City, baby.
I was just like, oh, that's maybe they like Racing Club in Argentina. I never really put it together. And like the Seattle Reign, I feel like that's a little bit of a pun. What are people's thoughts? Best named
There's
team
a lot of good
USL.
Ones. Like Angel City and San Diego Wave are both very, very strong. I think there's so many ones that I really like.
I like Red Stars as well.
I'd say the watermark in NWSL is higher than pretty much any other like American soccer league. Yeah. Like even the FCs, like I know Gotham FC is an FC, but it's Gotham. Yeah. That's
and
a cool thing.
Even like Bay FC I think is one of the most uninspired of the entire bunch, but I don't hate it either. Like it's cooler than saying San Jose FC or San Fran FC. Like I don't know. It's just not bad. Like it's none of them are bad.
Portland Thorns. I know it's not a new one, but I've always thought that has like a classic sound to it.
No, you make a good point.
Good badge as well.
Excellent names. I would have gone Horse Racing Louisville just to hammer it home. That would have been it. Yeah. Anyway, NWSL, consider yourself previewed. Taylor Rockhill, thank you very much for your participation in said preview.
My pleasure and thank you.
Graham Ruthven, a pleasure as always, my good man.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey.
And Joe Lowry, you keep on trucking, baby.
You too, Ryan.
Listener, thank you very much for joining us in this NWSL preview. Patreon.com/TotalSoccerShow for all our bonus content. Maybe even Graham will do an NWSL kits thing. I've just put that on his plate.
Oh, yeah. Patreon. I will do
there
that.
There we go. Yep. Lovely. Excellent. Consider it done. Listener, thank you very much for joining us on the feed. We'll be back very shortly. But for now, bye.